day, everyone, and welcome to today's College Underage Drinking Policy Conference. Just as a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your host for today. Please go ahead, Ms. Gordon. Your line is open.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Hello, and welcome to the OJJDP National Audio Teleconference Series. My name is Mary Gordon. I'm a Senior Program Manager with the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center at the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation. Before we begin today's call, I'd like to let our listeners know that this audio teleconference is being recorded, and it will be available for later listening from our website. During the presentations from our presenters, you will be in listen mode only. However, at the end of the presentations, you have an opportunity to participate in a moderated question and answer session. For those of you who have internet access to participate in the web presentation, you can log on to https://pire.ilinc.com/join/bbtvmvw. At that point, you will click on Join a Meeting, and you fill in the appropriate information. Now, please note that if you're using a dial-up connection, you may experience a delay in slides appearing on your screen. And for computer users, note that we also do have a chat feature on the web presentation where participants can ask questions and make comments. However, please note that the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center will not be monitoring this chat box, so we're not discouraging you from using this feature. However, we cannot assure that the information you receive through the chat box is the most accurate. We would also like for you to note that the views of today's presenters are not necessarily the views of UDEPC or OJJDP. If you have any questions about the materials presented today that do not get answered in the question and answer session, please feel free to email the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center at udetc@udetc.org. And we'll be happy to respond to you in a timely manner. The title for our topic today is, Does Your College's Underage Drinking Policy Get a Passing Grade? Colleges play a significant role in preventing alcohol use. Reducing underage drinking on college campuses is an important goal of school administrators because we all know that many of the negative consequences resulting from alcohol misuse have to do with some of the policies and strength of these policies. With most school years winding down, it's now an opportune time to consider the effectiveness of your school's policy on underage drinking, access, and consumption of alcohol. With us today are three presenters. We have Mary Hill of Hill Associates from Cannon Lake, Texas. We have Sergeant Jeff Merritt from the University of Texas at San Antonio. And Erica Rowe from Eastern Illinois University in Charleston, Illinois. Well, welcome, presenters. We really appreciate that you're taking time from your busy schedules to be with us and share with our audience the importance of a strong underage drinking policy, as well as describing some specific components and partnerships necessary to develop a policy. Let me tell you a little bit about our first two presenters. Mary Hill is a coordinator for the Texas Higher Education Statewide Initiatives for Prevention and a member of the Texas Drug Demand Reduction Advisory Committee. She's a former senior administrator of Dean of Students, a tenured professor, and a coach at Western Texas A&M University. Mary is a trainer for the OJJDP Pire Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center, and she has extensive knowledge of the culture of higher education and has numerous contacts throughout the United States. Partnering with her on this presentation is Sergeant Jeffrey Merritt. Sergeant Merritt has been in campus law enforcement since 1997. He has served on three different college campuses, ranging from small private institutions to large public universities. Sergeant Merritt has presented nationally on webinars and at the 12th Annual U.S. Office of Juvenile Justice Delinquency and Prevention Enforcing Underage Drinking Leadership Conference. He has a Bachelor of Science and a Master's Peace Officer license from the state of Texas. Sergeant Merritt is a member of the Texas Municipal Police Association and the Texas Crime Prevention Association. He became a certified crime prevention specialist in 2010. Mary and Sergeant Merritt, welcome. We're looking forward to your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Okay, I will start off. How do policies get a passing grade? As a former professor, I had to know what I was grading, what, why, who, and of most important, are they working? To have a policy does not guarantee effective prevention. If not, if they're not working, there are three things that I would like today for you to consider. What and where are the weak links? Identify problems and solutions. Collaborate with all campus and community partners led by top-level administration. Together, develop a plan and implement with evidence-based strategies. Evaluate the effectiveness of your policy and make changes when necessary. To get a passing grade for your policy, these are some steps that you need to remember. Next. So we want to look at what policies are we talking about? How? What are the policies that we are dealing with? In other words, why policies and who develops the policies? These are all kinds of things that you want to really remember. As we look at the next slide, you will see that we do need laws and policies. Underage drinking is widespread, unsafe, and in most cases, illegally. So what is the message of your policy? Is it a no-use message for students under the age of 21 that underage drinking is illegal? Or is it a harm reduction message to all students about drinking? If the message is that of harm reduction to all students, then that is what is creating the norm, and the norm is that drinking is a rite of passage. If the message is that you are under the age of 21 and alcohol use is illegal, then this is the message to determine the norm. What is the norm on your campus? Next. Grading your underage policies. What policies will we grade today? I would like for us to look at the federal policies and their mandates, the state policies, the community, city, county policies, and the institutions of higher education policies. Note, all policies, federal, state, local, should be included in an effective policy and process for institutions of higher education to develop and implement an effective policy that will reduce underage alcohol use and abuse on campus and in the community. Next. So, what do we have as campus policies? I think we can look at all of these together. The federal, and what is the purpose of them? I think this is some of the things that we may want to look at. Don, what slide are we on at this point?
Sorry? Okay.
What slide are we on? I wanted to be sure I didn't get ahead of my slides.
I have up, why do we have campus policies?
Okay, let me go
back. Which slide would you like to have up?
Put the grading your underage drinking policies on, if you would.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. What policies are we going to grade? And I went through the federal, the state, the community, and all of the different ones that we're going to look at. So next, why do we have campus policies? What is the purpose of it? Well, the main one, I think, is to promote students' potential academically, mentally, socially, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, but also to help manage the liability and risk. And then we're also to comply with federal, state, and local mandates and communicate standards for behavior. This is the reason successful evidence-based policies will reduce the underage alcohol use, change the attitudes, and behavior. But I'd like for you to think of more than just federal mandates. Sometimes that's all we think about. We need to do it because the federal mandates are there. We need to think of the spirit of the law and not just the mandates. The sense of Congress when policy was developed in 1986 was that they wanted campuses to have substance abuse prevention programs. There were the four reasons then were listed for the policies that I've just gone over them. So I would ask that you check on that. So let's go to the next slide. The evidence-based policies will change environment by reducing the underage drinking and change behavior. You know, we talk a lot today about our environmental strategies. Policies will influence the environmental management strategies. When campuses develop policies, they should make sure environmental management strategies are included, such as educating, enforcing, and adjudicating the policies and laws. This is one of the first environmental strategies we look at. I've given programs before on policy not enforced creates a new policy. Jeff later will give us some examples on this. But I use the concept of being a parent. I had to make rules at my home for my son and daughter. Most important, after I made my rules, I had to tell them what they were and then what the consequences if they did not follow. If I, in turn, did not enforce the rules, they made their own policies. And then we have a whole new policy. This happens a lot with our educational institutions. But I think the evidence-based policies will also, you can be sure that your policy will ban or restrict alcohol availability. You can be sure in your policy that you ban or restrict alcohol promotion. Changing the normative behavior, I've just given you an example of that, is what is your message. And then you use policies to manage your alcohol-free recreational options. Tailgating would be a good example of that, I think, as we look at the different ways that the policy can affect our environmental strategies. Next. So, again, why do we need it? Changing the campus culture requires that policies be flexible and adaptable. They may change year by year. Educate on policies. Students will say, that big old thing, I never read it unless they violate it, because all students are supposed to have a policy. Focus groups with students indicate laws are not being enforced or adjudicated. We did a Texas coalition with over 3,000 student athletes. We used the focus session, and this is what they told us. Enforcement and adjudication officers report sometimes to different vice presidents, and they do not always work together. Sanctions are not evidence-based. Divided responsibility who deal with violators, such as sometimes the Greeks do it, the athletes do it, the housing and so forth. A divided system is usually not as an effective risk management system as one set judicial or student conduct system. The emerging legal counsel has really a big deal on this. Attorneys will always ask in the case of litigation. They will want to see your policy. So the next slide will talk about the goal of the policies. Successful policies will reduce the underage alcohol use, change attitudes, behaviors, and social environment. Again, the four components that I went over before, promote the student potential, manage the liability and risk, comply with mandates, communicate, and this is so important, the standard of behavior, the expectations that you have for your college students. So your policy needs to be designed on a thorough and objective needs assessment. You should establish measurable goals and objectives. Implement activities that have been proven to be effective. And use evaluation results to refine and strengthen your goals and objectives. This would all be under our different policies. As we go to the next slide, you will see that we're going to talk about the federal policies. And I think this is the Drug-Free Schools and Community Act of 1986. Complying with this policy, in the first paragraph of this, most campuses have this in their policy, that they say that we will enact the policies preventing unlawful possession, use, and distribution of alcohol and illicit drugs by students and employees. Most policies will have that. We should be sure we have a written policy. We need to be sure that all students receive the policy. Failure to do so could put your school's federal funding in jeopardy. So we need to look at the next slide. Get started off on the right foot. And I think not only in 1989, you will notice that the federal government, U.S. Department of Education, amended this, 1989 amendments. And then they had certain things that had to be in the policy. They also mandated a biennial review and the audit in even years. I have given you a website that you can pull this up that will give you step-by-step with the Higher Education Center. This is an instrument, a publication that says complying with the Drug-Free Schools and Campuses Regulation, Edgar Part 86. This is a guide that you can use. But the buying review is very important. Again, that this describes what you are doing. It tells you about your goals. It determines the effectiveness and makes changes when needed. They will ensure that the sanctions developed are enforced consistently. Copies and method of how you distributed the alcohol and other drug policies to the student employees. And it will have the summaries of their strengths and weakness and recommendations for revising this. I can assure you, as I have served as an expert witness with a college campus, this is the very first thing that the attorney will ask for if they have litigation against the campus. They will say, let me have the buy-in review. So it's very, very important that you have this completed on your campus. So let's go to the next slide. The other is the Gene Clarity Act. Of course, this, and I have given you the website that you can pick up all the information about this. This is another federal mandate that requires colleges and universities to disclose information about crime on and around their campuses. The objective is to make available information to help in selecting a safer campus. We have other mandates since the Virginia Tech. They do require that the Gene Clarity publish an annual report disclosing campus security policies and 3 years' worth of selected crime statistics. Make timely warnings to the campus community about crimes that pose an ongoing threat to students and employees. Assure sexual assault victims have basic rights. Each institution with a police or security department must have a public crime law. Again, failure to do this may result in fines, other sanctions, or funding. Next, the state and local policies. These are very important. I have given you some websites that you can pull up your individual state. You should have all the policies of your state. In Texas, we use the Texas Alcohol Beverage Commission, and they will give us our policies for Texas. But so you should follow these in your state. You should follow your local laws and your policies. I have given you county. We have, in Texas, we have dry or wet counties. And I note that many of the other states have this. There's a website that you can pull up exactly what you need to know whether your county is dry or wet. So the Community Coalition is probably a very, very important group that can help you gain an understanding and assistance of your city, community, county, state laws and policies. You need to know them all. So next, as we look, how do we get this done? Most of all, your policy committee should be appointed by your president. And this committee should include all stakeholders on campus and in the community. If you are the AOD coordinator or the risk management, usually you are the one that should make a list of who you want on your policy committee, write the letter, and have the president sign it out. Include students, as they know what will work and what will not work. Be sure you have the Greeks and the athletes, the high-risk students, for first-year freshmen on your policy committee. Cover all your federal, state, and local laws. A good policy will facilitate a needs assessment to inform policy development. For example, look at crime stats or previous violations. Your policy should be updated with revisions each year. Policy should be easy to read with sanctions, visible so students will be educated on regulations. When I first moved into this, I asked the existing staff, what about the policy? And he said, oh, well, it's over there in that file. Just pull it out and change the dates. We didn't do that. For a year with our committee, we worked on this to get the policy to do what it should. Policy areas that are very important is your judicial, your on and off campus, your resident halls, your athletic events, concerts, and special events. So look at all of these as you develop your policies. Real quickly, as we look at sanctions, and this is the one thing that's left to each campus, the sanctions that you should have on your policy. I've listed some that a lot of campuses use, but we find that sometimes they're not as effective as they should be. For instance, fines, as I have focused with students, they tell me, oh, the parents just think it's another class fee, and so there's no big deal. Or sometimes loss of housing, they're looking for an excuse to get out. So we want to look at sanctions that really make a difference, and they should be researched. They should be evidence-based. At this moment, I think the research is lacking. I have not found a lot of research on what is working and what's not working. I do have three that we know through our model program and success stories have worked. alcohol screening and motivational interviewing, the University of Massachusetts Amherst used this as their sanction. They reduced their binge drinking 26% and 14% in underage drinking. The parental notification, Texas A&M College Station, this is one of our underage drinking enforcement training center success stories, the 2004. Since they started this in 1999 when we lost 12 students to a bonfire. Since they put the parental notification in 1999 until 2004, they've seen only 9 repeat offenders out of approximately 45,000 students per year. So it does work. Back to track. This is one that's being used by a lot of judicial student conduct offices today. It was first started at Colorado State University, and they are keeping data along with research by Dr. Donald Gary, and it's showing some promising results from students who have completed this program. Next. And I believe working together, I think, is important, that not just one department, but really there are some real key people, key roles, that will get a policy working that it would be effective with the grading. Each key partner has a role. Usually the alcohol drug coordinator is the one that will take the lead. The law enforcement, their major task is enforcing. The judicial student conduct is adjudicating the policy. The housing directors and RAs will help enforce, and on some campuses, adjudicate the policy. It is crucial that all of the staff, along with community partners, collaborate to accomplish the goals and objectives of the policy. All will be involved in educating the students on policy. So in summary, before I think at this point, I will let Jeff Merritt, as we have just heard with University of Texas San Antonio, is, as far as I'm concerned, a model with working with student affairs in enforcing the underage drinking law. So, Jeff, I will turn this over to you at this point.
Thank you, Mary. I appreciate that. And as you can see, you know, the wording on that slide right there, you know, what our purpose is, you know, safety and security, enforcement of laws. And all your campus police departments are going to have some kind of similar language stated in their mission statement or operations orders. But that's not the sum total of what a campus police department does. We can be a strong advocate and collaborative partner in making sure campus policies get a passing, if not ace, the grade. Next slide, please. And, you know, we're part of that successful strategy to reducing underage drinking. You know, campus police departments were very unique in the law enforcement community. And I've been told by, you know, city officers that I know that we have much more patience for people than they would have. And we understand, campus police departments, we understand what our role is in the university community. We know that we play a support role in the education process and how our mission of safety and security integrates into that process. Next. Well, why do you want to include law enforcement? Well, you know, we're looked upon by others in the campus community as the subject matter experts on alcohol on campus. We know the state laws. We know the enforcement actions that need to take place. But, you know, you're cops, not teachers, right? Well, I mean, why are we working on a college campus? You know, again, we're still part of that education process. That education process can even happen at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night when you're dealing with students. Next. Okay, so the messages that we can deliver. Obviously, the state laws. What are all the state laws that are involved in the Alcoholic Beverage Code or the Liquor Code, however your state has it. Talking about the element of the offense of driving while intoxicated or intoxication manslaughter, all those things. This gives us a chance for us to explain the laws because sometimes there could be some confusion or misunderstanding. For instance, in Texas, furnishing alcohol to a minor, a lot of the minors who are under 21 think, well, the only person who can get in trouble is the one that's over 21. Well, that's not the way the law reads in Texas. It says anyone who's furnishing alcohol to a minor can be arrested. So one minor furnishing alcohol to another minor can be arrested. So it just gives us that chance to explain the law so there's no misunderstandings. Next. And even in enforcement, we can deliver an educational message. What you see here is the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission has these cards that explain alcoholic beverage violations for minors. And many of our patrol officers, when they're issuing court appearance citations for alcohol violations, will include this pocket card to the minor as they're giving that that citation. So even in enforcement actions, we can deliver an educational message. Next, please. Now, some partnership and programming ideas. And this is just a short list of the many campus organizations that we at the police department partner with. And there are many more that we also collaborate on a number of other issues, too. We also partner with a number of off-campus and community resources as well. Circles of San Antonio is one of our big collaborators that we work with. Next, please. Okay, and the messages that we can deliver, I mean, personal stories. You know, we've all got them. And these are stories that we get buy-in from the students because they can place themselves in the situation. You know, a story, you can say, well, I once had a drunk who did this or did that. And, again, these are just kind of products that we can sell to the students to get that buy-in of those messages. Next. Okay, so who? This is kind of a breakdown of the people that we partner with and what we do, student activities. Here at UTSA, we have something called Rowdy Wing Fling. And the mascot for UTSA is the Roadrunner, and it's Rowdy the Roadrunner. And this idea actually came from the first Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission symposium that we did. As it was me, somebody from housing, somebody from JA, somebody from health services. We were all driving back. You had to send four people from every campus. And we just came up with this idea. And it was a big hit from the beginning, and this is going to be like our sixth year that we're going to do it. This coming up fall will be our sixth year. National Collegiate Alcohol Awareness Week, we participate with student activities in Campus Crawl. And most of all these activities that we do, it's our three-person crime prevention unit attends these events. And you should have some kind of crime prevention unit on your campus already. Or at least one officer who's a good public speaker, a good outgoing individual. You know, find that resource and ask them to partner with you. They're going to jump at the chance to partner with you and develop some of these program ideas. Next. Greek and student organizations, you're going to get almost automatic buy-in from them because of risk reduction plans. So, you know, we contact the Greek and the registered student organization advisors. We have flyers about our programming, and now we have a Facebook page, and so that's how we let people know the things that we're all about. Next, please. Okay, freshman orientation is a big part of what we do. We're very involved in this. The crime prevention unit, we spend eight hours of each week for 10 weeks straight doing nothing but supporting orientation activities. It gives a chance in the question and answer panel with the students to explain the laws and explain our role in enforcement. We're going to tell them that we're going to issue court appearance citations. I mean, straight up we tell them. First of all, because we're police officers. And that's our job. The second is because we know that strong alcohol enforcement drives down the other violent crimes on campus, like assaults and sexual assaults and vandalisms. And we also refer all our citations to student judicial affairs. We do Wednesday evening programming, self-defense for the women, a Texas Hold'em style poker game for the guys centered around sexual assault prevention. We partner with Student Health Services on that one. Next. And speaking of Student Health Services, peer education groups, health fairs, information fairs, you know, we get invited, again, to explain a lot of the things on alcohol laws, and we bring the drunk goggles, and we use those items also, too. Next. Well, and so does it work? Well, I mean, that's kind of hard to measure. I mean, you can measure your success by arrests. You can say it's successful because our arrests are going up, or you can say it's successful because our arrests are going down. You can measure success by the number of people who are attending your events or by feedback, you know, like patrol officers who've told me, well, it's not as busy as it was last year. You know, we're doing something right. Or students. I've had individual students tell me that they feel safer living on campus than they do off campus because of all the programming that we're doing. And, again, these other individual stories. But I think in the end, success breeds success. Next, please. Because law enforcement collaboration is the key. Our presence means something. You know, and particularly here at UTSA, once the PD were involved in these prevention efforts, and we just started off small and asked for a booth and asked for a few minutes of time, and it just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And we're so involved in this prevention effort that if we're late showing up, people start wondering, well, where's the PD? They're supposed to be here. And they are relieved when we do show up. So that's how we as law enforcement can be a collaborative effort. In making sure that we get that not only that passing grade, but to ace that grade. Thank you.
Jeff, that is great. And whenever I present, I always take Jeff if at all possible. But let us just summarize our part today, the collaboration in developing, educating, enforcing, and adjudicating the policy. This is an environmental strategy. I have added the education and adjudicating to this. But I think it's important that we get the key points. All stakeholders, include all stakeholders on campus and in the community in developing, educating, enforcing, and adjudicating your policies. Collaborate and foster relationships with all campus and community partners. Be sure you include the students and the parent input. And going back to the parental notification, the parents at Texas A&M College Station were a very key role in helping develop their program. Develop a strategic plan for developing your policy. Assess. Set your goals, your objectives, your activities. Implement what you're doing. Evaluate and revise. Use your environmental strategies as a basis for all policy outcomes. Document all activities. I think this is very important, that your passing grade will change the environment with your evidence-based policies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both, Mary and Sergeant Merritt. That was really thought-provoking presentation, and it really emphasizes the importance of a strong underage drinking policy and the effectiveness of strong collaborations. Our next, just as a quick reminder, for those of you who may have just joined our call, our topic today is, does your college's underage drinking policy get a passing grade? Our next presenter is Erica Rowe. Erica is the alcohol standards specialist for the Office of Student Standards, as well as the grant coordinator for the UTOL program. In her current job, Erica processes off-campus alcohol-related violations, which tends to keep her extremely busy. Erica has received her bachelor's degree from California Polytech State University at San Luis Obispo and her master's degree from Eastern Illinois University. Welcome, Erica.
Thanks, Mary. Like Mary said, my name is Erica Rowe, and I work here in the Office of Student Standards at Eastern Illinois University. We are an office of four, so as you can imagine, we're pretty busy. If we can go to the next slide. To tell you a little bit about our community, our community is a population of about 22,000 people. We are smack dab in the middle of the cornfields. We are about 3 hours south of Chicago and right in the middle between St. Louis, Missouri, and Indianapolis, Indiana. So we're pretty close to a lot of other areas and big towns. We're about 45 minutes south of U of I, which is our flagship institution for the state, as well as within 2 hours of about 5 or 6 other institutions of higher ed, and that's not including our community colleges that surround us. Eastern Illinois University, their population, our student population, makes up about half of our town population. We have about 9,000 undergrads and about 3,000 that are in either master's or certificate programs. For our, what we would consider a small rural town, we have several agencies of law enforcement that patrol at any given time. We have our university police, we have our local law enforcement, which is our Charleston police, we have the sheriff's department, we have our conservation police, we have our state police, which are in town, and occasionally we will have Secretary of State police patrolling our streets. For our campus, just a little bit to talk about kind of how things are done here, for education, that is left up to our health education resource center, and they tend to do the harm reduction approach because that's what's proven in all of the higher ed research. And then our role is primarily enforcement. So our role and our message that we send out to the students through ours is a no-use message. We live under the student code of conduct, which our student code of conduct is very fluid. Very rarely does it have to change on a yearly basis because we cover everything. I know recently there was a big talk about K2, but we didn't have to do anything in our policy to address intoxicating substances because that's what it fell under, was an intoxicating substance. So our student code of conduct is pretty meaty and covers everything that we would deal with normally when dealing with student behaviors. A big part of that also is, you know, which set up for our partnership was that our campus code addresses any violations of federal, state, and local ordinance are considered violations of the student code of conduct. I know some campuses are very segregated in the way that they handle student conduct issues. Our office is considered the point area for anything regarding student behaviors and concerning behaviors. So housing and residential life for all of their judicials or concerning behaviors go through our office. They might be farmed back out so that hall staff can meet with them, but everything comes through our office. So we are considered kind of the point office for anything regarding student behaviors. We can go to the next slide. If you can see our community, we are not a primarily residential community. Our first-year students are required to live on our campus, which is kind of, you know, the light brownish color there on your screen. So we house all of our first-year students, and then after that, they can choose to live on campus or move off. A majority of our students do live off campus and in the surrounding communities, which the primary student rental properties are in the green boxes, which surround our campus and to absorb most of the town. So when you drive through our town, which is 16 West Lincoln Avenue, you are pretty much driving through student rentals and other places that most of the time students can be seen on a regular basis. As with this, I know you can probably imagine from your own towns or the way that we were a couple of years ago, that being around student towns and student rentals during certain areas of time can be a problem, especially for off-campus. And if we want to go to the next slide, we would usually see the after effect, the morning after effects of our parties, which the biggest complaints were noise, trash, those drunk students. We had several angry community members that were upstanding members of our community. Police had earned the reputation of not doing anything in our community. University had the reputation of not doing anything in the community. And what we were finding out is that people and community members and law enforcement and people at the university only wanted to talk to the titles. People that held the title that they thought was the most important title, that was the person that was going to be able to do something. So they only wanted to talk to the chief of police, the mayor, the president of the university, or the vice president. Those were the only people that they wanted to talk to, was kind of the morning after effects of parties and just the way that our community was in early 2000. If we go into the next slide, what we could clearly see was that there was a breakdown in communication. The reason that we were not able to partner on anything to combat underage drinking was because there truly was a breakdown in communication. Everybody was very territorial of what happened. So city issues, university issues. We don't cross. If it's not really falls under us, then we're not going to deal with it. The other thing that we found is that people were just assuming that things were getting done. They assumed that, okay, if we call the police and we say, hey, can you make them turn down those music or shut down that party, they just assume things were getting done, even though necessarily they might not have. Another part is that we found that our citizens, our permanent long-time citizens, did not really understand law enforcement's role. One key thing is that they didn't realize that in order for a student to be cited, they had to say, yes, I want to press charges. A lot of times they were just calling and saying, well, I don't want to press charges and ruin their lives. I just want you to do something about it. So there was truly a breakdown in communication. If we go to the next slide. So about 3 years ago, we started looking at how can we start building this bridge? How can we go from the Lawn and Ivory Towers, which is the institution, to our community, to our entire, you know, area that is Charleston, Illinois. We are one town gown. We've got the town, which is our permanent citizens, and we've got the gown, which is the college. The way that we started that is we realized that some people just needed to vent. So we held open meetings. University officials, the president, the vice president, law enforcement, and citizens were all there, and they were able to express their concerns. At this point, it really felt like a firing squad, because this was the point where everybody was able to voice their concerns about the past, everything like that, and to realize that they needed to see beyond the titles. This was also an opportunity for university officials to explain that maybe the president is not the person that you need to be talking to. You need to be contacting the director of student standards regarding your concerns for those students or those things that are being done off campus. So we held our open meetings. Then we started doing lunch chats, just the time for us to get together as town gown people, so university officials, and not so much necessarily the president or the vice president, but the other key stakeholders in our community, so student standards, health ed resource center, health service, law enforcement, and build the bridge to, you know, the mayor, city enforcement, everything like that. So we could just, you know, get together on a semesterly or twice a semester basis to just kind of talk about what's going on in our community. One other way that we really tried to do this was we realized that we needed to spend some time getting to know each other and understanding what each other did. So with that, the Office of Student Standards, which is almost, you know, kind of like the courts for the university, did a lot of ride-alongs, as well as other university officials did a lot of ride-alongs with law enforcement at night when the students are out, when these complaints are originating. So that way, everybody could have a clear view, because I'm sure as many of you can imagine that if you work an 8-to-5 job, there's no way that you are going to truly understand what happens at 1 o'clock in the morning when the bars close unless you're there to actually witness it. So we did a lot of ride-alongs with law enforcement to really understand what the nights look like for them. We also invited law enforcement to come to our student conduct hearings and observe what the process was here at the university, because we know law enforcement quite often gets subpoenaed for court cases and DUIs and everything like that, but they're not necessarily asked to participate in the student conduct process. And so with this, this allowed law enforcement to understand our process and to answer any kind of questions that a student might have there in the field when they're having interactions with the students at night. The other part of building this bridge was what we referred to as the birth of the Muffin Lady, because essentially the way to build that relationship and to start our partnerships with law enforcement, we started bringing muffins and cookies and pumpkin bread, banana bread, everything like that to law enforcement as a way to just say, hey, we appreciate what you're doing. And this was something that was done through the Office of Student Standards here on campus. We would bring goodies to the start of the alcohol details that would happen on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights before they did their briefing meeting. So that way they had some snack and as well as, you know, could get excited about the night and really have a thank you for doing what you do before they have to go out and deal with all of the attitudes and potentially not nice behaviors that our students and their friends might engage in. And so we started with that as a way to build the bridge. And then if we go to the next slide, a true partnership was born. Through these little steps of getting to understand what everybody did at all levels, from the patrolman that just joined the department 3 months ago, to the chief of police, to the director of student standards, the vice president of student affairs, to the judicial officers here in our office, as well as city and state attorneys, we developed an open line of communication. We all understood what each other did. We all weren't afraid to let each other have a clue into our process or what was going on. We routinely will talk to our city attorney and our state's attorney about issues that are going on campus or off campus. One way that we do this is that all city citations and state citations or potentially 48-hour affidavits are copied and sent to our office. There is an understanding within our community that the more ways that we can assist our students to move past their mistakes and move on, the better our students are going to be on the other side. So this way we can all partner together in our adjudications of violations of the Student Conduct Code as well as federal, state, and local ordinances. One thing I know a lot of times that people worry about, well, if you have open communication, how do you guys not step on each other's toes? And a part of that is if we understand, I mean, we're all smart people, so we understand if the state's attorney has got an ongoing court process going on, we are going to kindly wait for our process to happen until after his has resolved. So it can be, you know, a little timely to deal with student behaviors, but we want to be sensitive to everybody else's processes, and so we do understand that. Routinely now, when we do our fall enforcement things, which happen in the first 6 to 8 weeks up until homecoming of the fall semester, student conduct staff is usually on those ride-alongs. They are in the unmarked cars with either city law enforcement or campus law enforcement to deal with that. We also routinely share information back and forth. Usually it's not uncommon for a patrolman to come up to us and say, hey, what happened with that student through your process? And we feel that it is justification for them for their job to explain that to them, to share, you know, oh, well, they were given the educational sanction, they were placed onto probation, they were given so many hours of community service, they were asked to do this with them. And it makes that patrolman feel that his job is all the more valued to by us in our office, because sometimes the way that it plays out in the court process isn't necessarily, you know, the way that maybe he thought it would play out that night when he was issuing the citations. And one thing for everybody to understand is that the standard of proof in institutions of higher ed is far less than it is in the court. We work off a preponderance of evidence, so is it more than likely that the student engaged in this behavior, whereas, you know, in courts it's beyond a reasonable doubt. So a lot of times for a student to be found in violation, they don't necessarily have to have them caught red-handed doing it. We look at everything and we go from there. Another way that we built a partnership with our liquor license holders, which we do have several bars right around campus and in the student-populated areas where they reside, is we offered free training. We offered free ID training for and, you know, tips training for all of our license holders and their staff. We chose not to do the train-the-trainer route to where you train the guy that owns the bar or the manager and expect him to pass it on to his employees. No, we invited every employee of those bars to come and take part in this training. The first training that we did, we went to one of our larger bars on campus or off campus, and we had 150 people show up from the 30 license holders that are in our town. That's not even everybody that was on staff. Since then, we have broken it down into smaller venues, so license holders will routinely, on a semesterly basis, bring law enforcement in to do this training for their staff, because they realize that it's not an added cost to them to pay a trainer to come in. Law enforcement offers it for free to all license holders. They don't have to pay anything for it. They've just gotten the educational. Everyone else is more informed as a result of this partnership. I know a lot of people are concerned, well, how do you get the information out to students? We do it during our orientation process, which is mandatory. It happens over 2 months during the course of the summer. All students are required to attend an orientation session. And at that orientation session, we have local law enforcement, we have our university police, and we have my office there to give out information to the students. And a lot of times, you know, students won't necessarily approach us because, you know, they all think they're not going to get in trouble, which for most of them is true. But we seek out students to make sure that they are aware of the policy. So they all get a copy of the most common or local ordinance violations that students receive. They get copies of the policies in the residence halls on campus. They get a copy of the student conduct code and what they are held accountable to. This is also given to their parents later on that day, so all parents of incoming students receive a copy of the student conduct code so that everyone is aware of it. As students come back and the semester goes on, we do presentations to several of our registered student organizations. Police do presentations, campus as well as city, as well as our office will do presentations. So students are out there. We primarily speak to athletics, our fraternity and sororities, any other student group that wants us to come and provide an educational program, because a lot of times they really like hearing the stories that go along with our educational programs. As I know the previous presenter had spoken about the stories. And then also that we do to target our students off campus and to address social availability of alcohol through the use of like house parties. We have a program called the Good Neighbor Program, which does meet and greets during the first 4 weeks of the semester and hits every single house in those student rental areas. The meet and greets are made up of the mayor and city staff. It's made up of police. It's made up of the fire department. It's made up of university officials and students that go around to all of these houses saying, welcome back. We just want to, you know, make sure that you are aware of what the city expects of you and, you know, answer any questions that you might have. So this way it provides that opportunity for that student to ask any questions of anybody that they might not normally seek out and see them in the light of day rather than at midnight when they're calling and knocking on the door for a noise complaint. So we found that this partnership has been truly effective. And one way that we found that this partnership has been truly effective is our numbers, which are on the next slide. We went from being a community where we only heard, the university only heard about the very serious crimes of the students. So we only heard about the student that was breaking into cars. We only heard about the student that injured an officer. We only heard about the student who committed a sexual assault. So now the first year that we really had this partnership up and running, to almost a 300% increase in our referrals to the Student Conduct Office by local law enforcement. University police always refer stuff to our office, but this was from, you know, our Charleston Police Department, our state's attorney, our Secretary of State, our Sheriff's Office. The amount of information that came into our office was amazing, from local ordinance to state citations. Then we looked at, you know, our second year that we had this partnership going, we saw over a 50% drop in referrals, and not that, you know, they're not talking to us or not sending anything to us, it's just that students aren't doing it. They have wised up, they have chosen to, you know, not drink, they've chosen to seek other ways of, you know, having fun on the weekends, but students are not getting in trouble as often as they were. Through our educational training with our license holders, this past year we had 100% compliance of all of our liquor license holders, which we are the only college town in the state of Illinois that received 100% compliance. One thing that I know, you know, students know, they get, the word gets around, is students know the process. They know the city process. They know if they get state citations what the process is, and they know what's going to happen to them on campus now as a result of this partnership, because they're educated in the field by the law enforcement officer, by the student. When the student says, what's going to happen to me, that law enforcement officer can say, well, you know, this is what's going to happen from the city side, but have you talked to the university yet? And can have that conversation with that student about that. And so a lot of the students know that everybody talks. Word is out. It's not uncommon for a student to come in and say, yep, I was an idiot. I knew I wasn't supposed to walk around with an open container in the city, but I chose to anyways. And this is what happens. I get my citation and I come and see you. So we found that it's dramatically decreased in our town as far as the availability of alcohol, as well as the number of students running into trouble with law enforcement as well. I know a lot of people talk about, you know, are you strictly looking at recidivism rates or are you looking at reductions in overall drinking? We do not run the survey that goes out to look at the amount of consumption that students are, which is usually either the CORE or the NCHA survey. That is done through another office. But we have seen a slight decrease over the past couple of years in the amount of alcohol that students are reporting that they consume on a weekly, weekend, or max setting basis. So overall, we've seen, you know, a positive, you know, partnership through our partnerships with law enforcement as well as our campus stakeholders to reduce, especially underage drinking, it seems like, in our town of Charleston, Illinois. And so if we go to the next slide, that is my contact information. So if anybody wants to know kind of, you know, what work plans we had working with or any other things regarding kind of how you share information or anything like that, that's the easiest way to get in contact with me. And with that, I will turn it back over to Mary.
Well, thank you very much, Erica. That was a real great example of stuff really being done out there in the field. And I really think that a lot of folks are going to use your PowerPoint as a checkoff list in terms of steps. And obviously that 100% compliance rate is very, very good. Thank you for that. Before we start to take questions, I'd like to remind listeners that you will be receiving an email with a link to a brief online evaluation for today's call. I ask you to please take a few minutes of your time to assist us by providing your assessment and feedback. We really do appreciate and utilize your input. So now at this point of the program, what I'd like to do is ask you to call and leave your questions or comments. We are not able to hold questions from the chat box, so we really prefer that you call in with any questions you might have put through the chat box. Sarah, at this time, can you provide our audience listeners with instructions on how to participate in the question and answer period?
Absolutely. To the audience, if you have a question or comment today, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. For those of you joining us today using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, to the audience, please press star then one if you have a question or comment today. And we'll pause for just a moment.
Do we have any in the queue yet, Sarah?
We do not at this time.
Well, let me start by asking a question, and I'll start with Mary and then, or Jeff and then Erica can respond as well. Is there any specific prep work needed as we approach a school to look at these college policies in terms of improving them? Any kind of necessary first steps?
Are we making the contact with campuses, universities, to see if they're doing what they're supposed to do? Is that what your question was, Mary?
Yes. If you're looking to find out as a coalition, you know, should I change this policy? What does it look like? What are some of the prep work you want to do before you approach that school or that administrator?
I think that we would find. I know we recently did some surveying of our campuses in Texas because we were looking at appearing before the legislators on some changing some mandates of sanctions, and so we did review our different campuses. Particularly all of our four-year campuses, to see what they were using as far as the, if first of all they had a policy, secondly, what they were using as their sanction. And so we did get this data. We're attempting to do more of this with our community colleges. In fact, we'll be developing a webinar for our Texas community colleges because we find this is an area nationally that we've sort of left behind as far as our prevention efforts. And so many of them are very interested in own policy and how to develop a policy, and were shocked that some of them that they could lose federal funding without a Drug-Free School Community Act policy, and especially the biennial reviews that are expected of all campuses who receive any form of federal funding.
Excellent. Erica, do you have any input in terms of, you know, some of the prep work when you start to look at some of these?
Yeah,
issues?
I think... since every institution is different, one big thing to understand before you approach a school is their organizational structure. I can't stress that enough. Every school is completely different. I mean, that is the one key thing. So maybe your experience somewhere else doesn't necessarily apply here. The other thing when approaching school is to figure out who your doers are. Ideally, your doers are part of your community coalition. If not, you probably should bring them to the table before you approach the school, because your doers are going to know the way to navigate the system and how to get in the door. Because if you go straight to, you know, a title, like I said, president or vice president, it's usually going to fall on not deaf ears, but ears that are so busy with other concerns that this is not necessarily on their radar. Whereas your doer for that issue is there on fire for it and will go to bat for you every single time. So figuring out the organizational structure and figuring out who your doers are on that campus.
Excellent. Sarah, do we have any questions in the queue?
We do have a question in the queue. Debbie Jo Metzger, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yes, this is for Officer Merritt. And I heard him mention in one of his trainings he used the goggles. And I've done some presentations at local universities for fraternity, and I was just wanting a little more detail as to exactly how you use those, because you don't want to make it a game, but they need to be able to do something that shows them the, you know, their reactions to that.
Right. Kind of the way we use the drunk goggles is we'll have the students put them on, and we'll have them do the first part of what's called the walk and turn test and the DWI. The standardized field sobriety testing, and you know, the whole, you know, 1 foot in front of the other, you know, keep your hands at your side, heel to toe, that kind of thing, and have them look at their feet through the goggles. And yeah, it's very hard for them to walk the 9 paces up without them stumbling. Their friends are looking at them, they're laughing, and they're even taking pictures of them in their photo camera, stuff like that. And yeah, it's kind of funny, but then it gives us a great chance to explain. You know, obviously this is just simulating, and, you know, whatever the alcohol level is on the goggles, this is simulating that alcohol, that intoxication, but what if this was for real? What if this, you know, this was, you know, at 3 o'clock on Saturday morning on the side of the road? Then it's not funny anymore. And this is really trying to simulate, what happens. And so you kind of see that light bulb going above their heads, kind of turning on and go, oh, you know, I never thought about it that way. So for us, that's how our effective use of those goggles are. Student Health Services, when they do, again, when we're doing the information fairs, they'll have the little tricycles and have them do around the tricycles, or they'll have them with the radio remote control cars and try to steer the remote control cars around. And again, that's kind of a fun thing, but I think kind of the way we do it, it really just, you see that recognition in their eyes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sergeant. Sarah, do we have another caller on the line?
We do not, but once again to the audience, it is star then one for questions.
Okay, then let me throw another question out here. Erica, what's the biggest angst you think with schools in terms of addressing some of this, or is there any angst?
I know with our school, there isn't necessarily, I wouldn't say that there's angst because I think we have a pretty good relationship. I think a big problem, or I think an initial angst that we might have had is just that we weren't getting the information. Just calling us and telling us about, you know, a problem isn't any way that we can start our process. So I guess would say an angst from universities as far as being able to start their process is they need something in writing. They need some kind of documentation for what, you know, occurred in the form of a citation or anything like that. And just being able to share information freely across the board goes a long way. You know, we're able to call up to the state's attorney and ask him how his case is going with the full understanding that we're not starting our case until his case is done. But so that way we're all in the loop and we don't feel like they're going to wrap up their process and then we're still sitting here waiting.
Excellent. Thank you. Earlier, Mary, you talked about some possible college sanctions and you numbered a few of them and named a few of them. Can you give us one or two that you think are most efficient? We know that it depends, obviously, on the environment.
Well, we know that the alcohol screening motivational interviewing, and the reason we have a lot of documentation on this is our model programs, U.S. Department of Education model programs, of which we have done site visits. And this is one of the first things we go as a team, the evaluator asks, and that we review all of this to see, yes, did this work? And so we have done some research on that. The parental notification the campuses that have used it have done. We're still in the process, and Dr. Gehring, as I mentioned, is trying to do. We really need more research on are the sanctions working, because this is a crucial part of the policy, and we want to be sure that it's effective, that it's science-based effectiveness. And so we just need to – this is probably a missing link for us is on the research from our campuses because, again, each campus has their own – they can do what they want to do. They can put in whatever they want, up to suspend the students if they so desire. So they have that leeway, and we just need to see what is working because the sanction is a very crucial part of the policy.
All right, thank you, Mary. Sarah, do we have any calls in the queue?
Debbie Jo Metzger has a follow-up question. Please go ahead.
I guess I'm the only one that has any questions today. Is that actually a follow-up question? I know of a college that we have in our area that also uses a separate security force company, and I was wondering if anyone knew of some of the problems or difficulties they've seen with those through other colleges, because I don't think any of you guys had that situation.
The three colleges that I've worked at, we had our own security officers. It was police officers and security officers. Also, we're part of the police department here at UTSA. We have some security guards that work on our staff, and then we have the full-fledged law enforcement officers. I do know there are some universities that do that, and again, just from my research and what I've read and some of my other experiences outside of higher education, is that they're going for, to be honest with you, kind of the lowest, whatever it's going to cost them the least amount of money as far as a private security company, and so you may not get the best value out of that, and you're going to get officers, they're just filling slots. So you're getting people that are probably not real tuned in to, security on higher education campuses. And I do know, again, just in some research that I've done, there are probably some success stories out there of universities who have contracted with private security companies, and maybe they have a their director of security as a university employee, but then they contract the rest of just the patrol officers with a security company. And again, you have that one person who is in charge of and knows, again, that supportive role that security should play. But just from my personal experience, no, I've not had any experience with that.
Jeff, I might add on to that. We do have some campuses that hire private to do the parking tickets. You know, this type of where they write the large campuses, they use, rather than using their police officers, they use recruited to do the parking tickets and that type of assignments. So I do know of some that have done that, and probably that type of task is effective.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, all the presenters. I really want to take this time now as we start to close out this and thank the presenters for being on this call. We actually have had a great call. We've had a former university administrator, we've had enforcement, and we've had an alcohol standard specialist. So we really are kind of walking the walk and talking the talk about the collaborations and different partnerships involved in solving some of these issues. So on behalf of the OJJDP and the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center, I would really like to thank our guests for speaking today and our audience.
I'm sorry, ma'am, pardon the interruption. We've just had another question come into the queue.
Okay, let's
Did
get
you have
that
time
question
to take
on.
That?
I sure do. Let's do it.
Okay, mm-hmm. We'll go to Karen Cole. Please go ahead.
Okay. What I was wondering about is, do you have any training companies or anything like that that could train the private companies that are security companies for the campuses? Because the one gentleman I did talk to, he said they don't have any specific training for college campuses. They're more of a security company. And so when they have worked on these college campuses, their training is very minimal, and they don't know who to go to for training.
Yeah, and that would be probably a really good idea for somebody to start that kind of training.
That would be my new job.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because, again, here in Texas, you know, in order for, because there are certain, you know, armed security officers, unarmed security officers, and they have, you know, just kind of general, you know, training and things. And again, they're just kind of more, you know, their whole thing is to be at a construction site or a grocery store or something like that.
Right, right.
But then when you're getting into actual enforcement of policies on a college campus, yeah, that's a whole different type of security operations.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I mean, I will speak for the University of Texas system. We have our own police academy in Austin. And so if you get hired by UT San Antonio, you get hired by UT El Paso, you get hired by the UT Medical Branch in Galveston, you get sent to the one academy in Austin, and it's run by the Austin Director of Police for UT System. And that's, for us, for as police officers are concerned, that's where you get some real standardization of what it means to be a law enforcement on a university campus. And, I mean, again, not only do we cover all the state mandate stuff, but they throw in a lot of university elements in there that really prepare, you know, the new police officers when they come onto the college campus to face what it is to be on a college campus.
Hmm.
Like Jeff said, I think that's a great training opportunity. I know that, for instance, your liquor control boards on most of your states do a lot of beverage training, alcohol beverage training. So I think this would be something that perhaps we could visit with this person on your camp in your state to see if this is something that they would be interested in.
And I know of a management company that does a lot of training with law enforcement. And depending on what kind of things you're looking at, they can usually custom tailor that to a college campus.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, feel free to email Erica, and I can send you their contact information, and you can follow up with them and see if it's something that maybe would fit your needs.
That would be great, because this is Illinois, too. So,
okay. A lot of your campuses, you might want to contact, and I can give you that, do privatize with their resident system. And so they have been working with a similar type of a situation. So if you want to send me an email, I can give you those people.
Okay. Well, this sounds like a real opportune time for me to tell you all that if you do have additional questions, because unfortunately we're kind of a little bit dependent on time schedules here, that please call the toll-free number we have here at the center. It's 1-877-335-1287, or you can send us an email at udetc@udec, that's udetc.org, and we'll be happy to provide any answers or connect you with, obviously, the wonderful resources we have here on the call. And as we've gotten the information for the presenters, you're also we're happy to have you contact the presenters as well. So for those who aren't connected to the web presentation, again, I'd like to thank the youth presenters we have for being part of this. It was obviously an interesting and very enlightening audio call. And as I mentioned earlier, this audio call is being recorded. So for those of you that were taking notes or might have missed one or two pieces, you can obtain a copy of the audio call, and you can download it from our website. And again, that's www.udetc.org. And copies of the slides and presentations can also be obtained by requesting them via email. So finally, I'd like to remind you that the views of those today are not necessarily the views of OJJDP, the Underage Drinking Enforcement Training Center, or Pacific Institute for Research Evaluation, and are solely those of the presenters and audience participants on our call. I also would like to invite you to join our next audio teleconference, which is scheduled for July 21st, from 3 to 4:15 Eastern Time, and the topic for that will be translating research into action on alcohol issues. And we're also interested in your ideas and suggestions for future audio calls, and we've had a great audience here, and I'm sure you guys have a couple of suggestions, so please, again, forward us any suggestions you have for audio calls to our toll-free number at 1-877-335-1287, or you can send them to our website at, or you can send them via our website at www.udetc.org. Again, I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon. My name is Mary Gordon, and I thank you all for all you do in preventing youth access to alcohol. Have a wonderful day.
And that concludes today's conference. We thank you all for joining us.